Good afternoon. Welcome to the Henry Rain Show here on WWPR, 1490 AM, heard every Saturday, 1205 PM to 1:30 PM. And it's your weekly roundup of Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, blockchain news, and more. Well, what happened this week? Bitcoin price pain continues as cryptocurrency plummets to a new 15-month low. The Securities and Exchange Commission delays making a decision on VanEck Bitcoin ETF application until February of 2019. Grayscale Investment Trust controls over 1% of the total circulating Bitcoin now, and even pro-crypto U.S. Securities Exchange Commissioner Hester Peirce, the darling of crypto people everywhere, has said it's going to be years before we get an ETF, or maybe in a couple days.
We don't know.
No, we don't.
They'll leave us in suspense there. Yeah, a suspenseful movie.
And we'll keep you in suspense about who's in the studio today, although we're hoping for a surprise in a few minutes. Well, no surprise there, because you heard him.
Makes me sound old and decrepit.
He didn't like it before. He didn't like it now.
Need some like dead Kennedys or something to really get a puff.
Oh, that'll make you sound alive.
Yeah, there we go.
All right. Well, who else is here today? And ever patient today, appreciate that. Augie is here in the studio.
Good midday, and I listened to Andy's show on the way up from Sarasota. The depressed state of red tide has decimated the economy down there. Siesta Key is pretty well empty. The beach is unworkable financially, but quite walkable, quite safe, actually, and there's no red tide. But the propaganda in the Chamber of Commerce is killing the economy locally. But economies being what they are, and Bitcoin being what it is, I had a meeting with a young realtor yesterday, and he is an investor in Bitcoin.
Oh, is he?
Yes, he is.
How long
He bought in a year ago, about when most people did, in a big way. He's from about $3,000-$4,000 down to $200, with not much hope of recovery. And
he bought in not when everybody did. He was the last of the people.
He probably was. Yeah. But the promises are just that, promises, like the Broadway play, promises, promises. The regulation issue is huge, and it's biting Bitcoin because the January horizon is going to bring that out and clear up the mud. How much it's going to do it is, I think, the large question.
Can you clear up mud? Has that ever been done?
Well, when you clear up mud, you wash it off of things.
Oh, okay.
You extract the colloidal crap that gets in the way of looking at something. Well, when you clean up a coin, a gold coin, you're the gold bug, what do? You to know that you really have gold, Andy. You're the gold bug. Tell us how you do that.
Well, I've actually been doing this. I can just feel it. And I can tell you, that's the real deal there.
I spend a lot of time feeling it.
Yeah, I do. I love gold.
It sounds like a sexual moment there.
It is. It's very intimate,
Okay. Yeah. Let's get back on track here.
Henry, nervous now.
Hey, it's just like anything else. It's the military guys that can
maybe
do that.
Maybe should have said sensual moment.
Yeah, sensual moment.
I've been wondering, the last few weeks it's been like this Three Musketeers thing going on. I think I know why nobody else has it. Oh, gosh, if we could just get someone to say.
Oh, there she is. She walked in. Holy cow.
What? Thanks for all the surprise.
What? We're going to hear her.
There's a surprise coming up in case you didn't know.
Well, I think I'm just going to go to dead air on that.
The room just got brighter.
I'm going to dead air. Right here. I was in here.
I know. You're like, don't say anything when he comes in.
I'm going to tell you now, because Augie's going to come in here and blow the surprise.
Yeah, I know.
Augie, she was supposed to come. We had a tweet meet.
Yeah, but you're supposed to follow the format of the show.
Well, now that the cat's out of the bag, go ahead and play the music.
She's not an old bag. What are you saying?
I'm talking about you, but, you know, go ahead and play the music there.
I'm going to play her new music.
Get some DW-40 on that.
Yeah, that was a mistake. That's who's walking in the studio now. We've been getting some texts from her. It used to be, you know, the happy financial woman. Yeah, but... So, Kara, in the weeks that we've been playing Three Musketeers in the studio here, and we haven't seen you, what's happened to you?
Mercy, I know, you've lost me, right? It has been a while, hasn't it?
Yeah.
So
there's a whole different aura, you know.
There is, but I did see smiles all around when I walked in, nonetheless.
Yeah. We're happy to see you, but there's this thing that's going on in your Twitter, your tweet storms and your other things.
So it's been inside me for a long time, and
there was.
Since the beginning of the year, actually, I just did a better job of balancing things.
So all these months you were putting on a facade to us where you were the happy blockchain CPA?
I definitely think that Augie needed additional assistance.
That's true.
What happened, actually, was in October when accountants really started getting involved in the space with issuing attestations. You don't want me to go on this tangent.
No, I'm just I'm just cursing the other accountants other than the one we love here in the studio.
They did it to me. What happened is they woke several individuals on Twitter that have been very interested in making sure that people understand accounting and audit, and they pulled me into some Twitter threads that were miscommunicating what assurance is, and from there I couldn't hide any longer.
I noticed on your Twitter timeline a while back you quit tagging topics, you quit tagging Twitter handles. It's like this little closed CPA accountant world that you don't want the rest of us to see?
Not so much that, but I am very deliberate and methodical when I do choose to tag. So there is definitely a method to my madness, but somehow a lot of my non-tagging still gets picked up.
That's because Twitter always tells me, hey, she's just sent a tweet out. So.
But it's interesting for the most part at this point. You know, I tried to detox from tether watching, I think, back in July, and I have not been able to do that, and so I'm all in on stable coins and watching the major exchanges reduce their exposure to Tether.
Why are you on stable coins?
Why am I?
Why are you all in, that is to say?
So I'm definitely not all in terms of stable coins being an investment or something that our listeners should be racing out to purchase. I'm all in researching them because, number one, they are the only things out there right now that are under accountant's watch because they're issuing attestations for at least Gemini, Paxos, and
there's a chronology
True.
For that?
The
chronology is there, therefore you...
Well, it's more so that, I mean, there's an overlap of my interests. I mean, I'm an auditor, and there's auditors now attesting to cash reserves backing up the one-to-one token of some of the major coins, and I personally believe that many of these coins, like Circle, and Paxos, and of course Tether, all have related exchanges. And so I'm watching other exchanges also that have heavy Tether positions utilize these stable coins.
By related exchanges, you mean they have their proprietary stable coin that they created?
Well, Goldman Sachs backed Circle.
Okay.
They bought Poloniex. Goldman Sachs has also got the Bitmain. Bitmain's part of it as well. So they created the Center Consortium, which is what directs Circle, the USDC. And that coin, or Center, is Coinbase and Poloniex behind that, or Coinbase and Circle. But Coinbase and Poloniex are very related through USDC, as well as other joint ventures. And in particular, what I find most interesting at this moment is Coinbase just listed Zcash, and Poloniex turned around and announced that they're disabling Zcash deposits and withdrawals at the same time. And I'm also noticing that pattern throughout different exchange listings and announcements.
And what do you suspect?
Well, I just find it interesting at this
or
moment.
Or not suspect. What questions does that form in your mind?
Well, that there could potentially be arbitrage happening behind the scenes with something.
Is that collusion?
Well,
you don't have to talk about it.
I can't say collusion exactly. Henry's right. When it comes to collusion, you have two parties with bad intentions working together to cover up something. In the case of arbitrage, I mean, that doesn't necessarily require, I mean, that's a little bit different from collusion. But I'm also seeing, I mean, at this point right now, you know that I'm following the risk premium on Tether exchanges versus non-Tether exchanges. So like your Bitstamp, your HIT.
What would the risk premium be?
So the risk premium, and I haven't even looked at it this morning. But
what do you mean by that term?
But what I mean by the risk premium is that Bitcoin on Tether traded exchanges where you can't, where there's no fiat off-ramp,
okay. It
is trading at a higher rate. So let's say the last time I looked at it, it was, say, $34.88 was the price
of
Bitcoin.
So your Bitcoin would cost more Tether than dollars.
So Bitcoin is trading at, let's make it easier since we know I can't do math, $3,500 on the Tether-only exchanges. And then on, like, Kraken and GDAX, it might be at, like, $3,400. So, there we go. Oh, thank goodness. Andy with all the high tech. I forgot my internet. I forgot everything.
You were so anxious to be here.
I was. I missed you all so much. So, what's happening on those, and in particular, you know, it's happened many times before, but of course it's most interesting to me right now, is like HIT BTC, that exchange, has shut down, or they have a problem with people being able to withdraw Tether as well. And that's been the case all week. So when you have a situation like that, people trading on HIT BTC can only withdraw through Bitcoin.
Oh.
Otherwise they're forced to hodl Tether, which makes me shamefully giggle every time I say it.
Why?
Hodl Tether? Because I think at this point, I think most people know.
Because she doesn't like laughing at people that are losing, but it still makes her laugh.
There we go. And really the main thing is I don't think that Tether should ever be held. I don't think anyone should ever hold Tether.
Unlike what Andy does with gold. Yes.
he overhauls it. All right, on that thought, let's go to a break, and we'll come back with Kara, the contrarian, Andy, and Augie. The trading and investment ideas you hear on Talking Markets with Mark and Andy, then you're going to want to become a member of their SeekingCryptos.com membership service. And you can join for absolutely free. When you sign up for a free membership at SeekingCryptos.com, you'll start receiving analysis and perspective by email on trade examples, cryptocurrencies, stocks, metals, educational content, and exclusive offers. SeekingCryptos.com has something for you advanced traders too. Check out the premium membership, the expert swing trades, or the Quant Geeks packages. Seeking Cryptos has skin in the game just like you. They post their trades in real time, and you can follow the results right on their portfolio page. So what are you waiting for? Go to SeekingCryptos.com and sign up for your free membership now. If you're a business owner, you need to start listening right now to find out how a few feet of empty floor space can turn into a steady stream of both money and new faces into your business. Hosting a Bite Federal Bitcoin ATM gives you a leg up on your competition by giving your location a destination-oriented visitor that will come back time and time again. Frequent Bitcoin ATM customers become frequent shoppers in your storefront. To find out more, just call 877-855-BYTE, B-Y-T-E, or 877-855-2983, and you'll be talking to the same local business experts you've heard on the Henry Raines Show. Or just go to BiteFederal.com and fill out the simple form to begin hosting a Bitcoin ATM in your business. Don't wait. Start earning new revenue and seeing new customers right away. Call 877-855-BITE, B-Y-T-E. That's 877-855-2983, or go to BiteFederal.com.
Alcover Massage has been providing quality massage therapy in Bradenton for over 5 years, and we are proud and excited to announce we've expanded our practice and boutique to a larger facility. Located at the historic downtown Bradenton, we're in a charming craftsman-style building across the street from the Spring Hill Suites by Marriott. Alcover Massage offers many treatment rooms, a spacious lobby, and doorfront parking spaces just for our clients. But what we're most proud of is our highly qualified massage therapists offering great service to our valued clients. Availability and instant booking is found at lauraalcover.com. Alcover Massage. Like us on Facebook, 204 13th Street West, Bradenton, Florida, 34205. Book your appointments now at lauraalcover.com or call us at 941-592-3187. MM number 34081. MA number 50525.
Hey, this is Brian. I listen to her every week. I really like it. Me and my wife, we just stop our cars every Saturday at 12 o'clock, make sure we listen to the show. It's great. I'm learning a lot about these cryptocurrencies. Keep on listening.
Henry Raines Show here on WWPR 1490 AM. It's a landmark show today. It's always a landmark at 12.05 p.m. every Saturday to 1.30 p.m., but it's a extra landmarky landmark today, because returning to the studio is the radio personality formerly known as Blockchain CPA. Now it's just contrarian Kara, and happy to have her here.
It's great to be back.
Yeah, well, let me turn your mic on just to prove I'm happy to see you.
Great to be back, Henry. Thanks so much. I think maybe, yeah, contrarian CPA, crypto CPA, I'm not too sure. We'll work into something.
Well, it'll change.
Exactly.
It's all I had from last night. There was quite an exchange going on the super secret high-level crypto chat group that is for certain eyes only related to this show.
It definitely brought me back to about four times I broke up with someone. I would just have to say that. I was like, oh, my God.
I could tell you were taking it a little deeply and personal. I, of course, was, you know, I could see the intellectual arguments that were coming forward. But I did see on the male side of the exchange, because not just Andy, but Leonard was partaking. I was like, just, you're not going to change this person's mind about what you're talking about. And it's like, just give me one more chance. I almost put some very... I almost put some gifts up there, GIF, but I said, no. If it was a real breakup in a personal life, you wouldn't appreciate those. And
it was like that song, Baby, It's Cold Outside, you know. You're
no,
kind of,
it wasn't,
you know,
anything like
no,
that.
Yeah, I don't think so.
It was like that song, Baby, Come Back.
I was kind of like the price of Bitcoin just plummeting. Like, I could just see, based on some of Andy's shock, that I'm like, oh, maybe I forgot to tell him that.
Let's move on. I actually, in light of that, and actually on previously, because I knew you were coming back, and I knew sort of where your head was at about this stuff, and I put the headlines on here thinking, this will really allow Kara to come forward and lay it out there for people. And then she was like, yeah, that doesn't sound like anything I want to talk about anymore. But I know better.
Henry, you do. You always do know better. But when I did, I thought, wait, I believe I explicitly said, these are the topics that I don't pay attention to anymore at all. And I got the show notes, and all of them were included.
Yes.
I really appreciate
it. And actually one that I didn't expect that I thought would be just perfect for where your head's at. We'll get to that in a moment.
Fantastic.
Hey, I've got news for you.
Well, this week brought more bad news for Bitcoin investors. The world's largest cryptocurrency fell as much as 11% to a low of 3,293 on Friday, its lowest level since September of 2017, according to data from CoinDesk. Over the past 7 days, it's down more than 20%. This follows a miserable November for Bitcoin, ended the month down 37%. It's the worst drop since April 2011, when cryptocurrency fell about 39%. Other cryptocurrencies suffered on Friday. Ripple, the second largest in market value, was down 7%. Ether fell 11%. Timothy Tam, CEO of cryptocurrency research firm CoinFi, which, you know, when CoinFi talks, people listen, said Bitcoin's large move downward was a combination of factors, showing the great insight at CoinFi to pull that analysis out there. But on Thursday, the SEC extended the review period of much-awaited Bitcoin ETF until February 27. Personally, I don't think that actually shook the market up too much. While Gabor Gerbax, who's spearheading the Bitcoin ETF at Van Eck Investments, he's the, director of the digital currency strategy or something like that. We're going to hear from him in just a second. Said the move was expected, and the market still reacted. Mike Morrow, CEO of Genesis Trading, said, unlike prior weeks with drama and another cryptocurrency, Bitcoin Cash, this week's moves don't appear to be event-driven. Well, we'll talk about that in a minute. Quoting Mr. Morrow, it looks like a continuation of the momentum trade that has been for all of 2018. Obviously, taking Andy's advice, don't look at the daily chart. Pull out and take a bigger look. Short interest has continued to spike as trading firms look to take advantage of the volatility. Morrow has also seen an uptick in selling by some long-term Bitcoin holders. In my personal opinion, that might be the biggest mover of all. He quoting again, the general market sentiment seems to be that this crypto winter could last for some time. Not too many people are expecting a V-shaped recovery in 2019. No. It could also be speculation that a certain early Bitcoin investor is dumping his or her Bitcoin. They detected about $231 million of Bitcoin moving from a wallet that hadn't been touched since 2014 And I think if you go back to some of our shows the past few weeks, there's been other movements similar to this by other wallets that have been dormant for a while. Within 15 to 20 minutes of the signal, markets immediately began to move, said Tam from CoinFi. Again, it's a knee-jerk reaction. Retail investors are acting on speculation and raw emotion. Well, the aforementioned Gabor Gerbax from Van Eck was quite upbeat when he was on Thursday on the more millennial news service Cheddar. I don't know who watches that here. It's not a normal cable channel, but it seems to be popular.
It's pretty cheesy.
Okay.
I had to get it in there. Come
yes,
on.
Yes, I know. I don't blame you at all for that. But let's see how cheesy Gabor was.
Bitcoin, not so much the equity market. Stay on Bitcoin, crypto. Can you give us a status update on the VanEck SolidX Bitcoin ETF proposal?
Yeah, certainly. So you know, it's fairly clear for us that America wants a Bitcoin ETF, and you know, I can talk only so much about the product that is in registration. So an update would be that we are awaiting feedback from the SEC. The last day that the ETF could be approved is the end of February. We think that we have met all required market structure obstacles and requirements on pricing, custody, valuation, and safekeeping. So you know, we are you know, cautiously optimistic, but there's a lot more work to, you know, to be done sort of to get the market ready. And you know, some good announcements recently on over-the-counter markets being transparent, and NASDAQ entering into the space with its surveillance capabilities, our very own host, you know, NYSE.
Is he talking about Cara there? Market's becoming more transparent. They got surveillance going on. All right, well, let's finish up. I'll see if he tips his hand.
Nice to have that coming to market, so lots of good market structure developments.
All right, so that was just warming us up. But let's start with something that Cara is, I guess, probably one of the best people, individuals doing this right now, wallet watching. What do you make of the last part of that? The $231 million coming out of a dormant wallet since 2014, and not the pundits, the executives involved in the industry say, don't worry about that. That's knee-jerk reaction. What are your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are that they're so heavily vested in retail investors and institutional investors to FOMO in at this time. Of course they have so much money and so many of these. Now, I don't recall when the VanEck Group got started on their product, but many of these companies started around January. And so they got in at the high time. And they're reliant now on making up their losses. So, of course.
At whose expense?
Well,
other bag holders.
Other bag holders, of course. I mean, this is my opinion. But
as everything is on the show.
Well, exactly. It's only from observation of what I can piece
together.
Don't
make personal decisions on anything we say.
Ever. but the main thing is that I think some of them had hoped to get the enthusiasm and the liquidity up and the volume and the price through whatever means you may think they may have. With the hope that once that rose up, they could unload their bags to the institutions.
I'm going to digress, but not far, for just a little. There's a saying, don't ever try and change the opinion of someone whose livelihood depends upon it. And I just want to remind Augie, I don't know when it was, about 07 or 08, there was some panel you put me on with Rob Loy, the news director of WMNF, the community station, which raises funds through donations, like a regular public radio station. And I was doing the morning drive show here at that time, and of course selling sponsorships. And you have to think back 10 years before YouTube was so big, before so many of the. It was before Facebook it was popular, before Twitter was popular, where you could broadcast all these things. But I was saying,
I think the question was, how do we open up media to more voices? Was that more or less what it was?
Right.
And so I was there from the commercial side. He was there, and he had some other speakers. I think the Bradenton Herald publisher or editor and some people.
Yeah, it was
good
Tom Ryan, I believe.
And I said that to Rob Lori when he was saying why everybody needed to debate, and the only way we were going to get it was through public donations to get a variety of media. And it came back to me, and I said that to him. And I realized that
you just pissed
probably
him off.
It was not the most. He goes, well, you could be like Henry. He's running around like a chipmunk trying to sell a sponsorship. And
yeah, he did kind of come after you on that one.
That was a proud chipmunk moment.
You know, let me make a comment back on that when you're talking about the whales moving and stuff like that, historically, large.
By the way, I just should say Rob Lori has done a great job up at WMEF. He used to invite me on Ford this week on Channel 3.
You know who Rob Lori is? He's on 88.5.
And the host of Ford this week on WEDU Channel 3.
He's on PBS on
Friday.
8:30 on Friday. You're really 12:30 at noon.
I'm very narrow focused. You know.
Yeah, anyway. It wasn't anything that lasted past that evening.
Well, Rob used to come on when I was head of I founded the Southwest Coalition for Peace and Justice with some help from Henry at the beginning. And that lasted about 15 years. But Rob would come to our events at the Golden Apple, at the Manatee College Auditorium, all these events that we organized in those days. He never missed one of them. And he was very interested in this area. And he's got a lot of prominence to people on the left, which is why you probably don't listen to him.
Well, no.
The people on the right.
No, he's more than that, because on Florida This Week, you get state leaders
and national media people.
His
show is considered a liberal opening. But the point is that Rob is pretty articulate, and I've debated with him on stage and so forth. But he's prominent. If you talk to people that are outside of the inner circle, the Trumpians, then you're going to find something like that. But Rob is respected, and Florida This Week is...
He's like the Walter Cronkite, for people that can remember Walter Cronkite of Tampa Bay.
Yeah,
the longest-running continual news personality in Tampa Bay.
Florida, he gets paid for Florida This Week. He's not
TV and radio.
He's not donating. And it's repeated on Sundays at 12:30. It's a half-hour show, television show. And he does a pretty decent job. But he's sure to bring in two sides of every argument. He doesn't fail on that.
You know what show I really miss? The Prairie Home Companion.
Oh, you do?
I love that show.
You know what happened to him?
Yeah, that was...
What happened to
Al
Franken?
You can listen to the new incarnation. They do all the same shtick as he did.
Yeah, but it ain't the same.
Do you know what happened to Baby It's Cold
Outside?
Well,
we're getting too far out in the weeds now.
Wrap
up your point so we can move on, Augie.
A couple beers out on the patio and go swimming.
Okay, Augie, where was that point going, though?
Well, I was making the point that now it's gotten so bad, the Me Too thing, that they're banning the playing of Baby It's Cold Outside.
That was the whole thing about Rob Lori was to get
no,
the baby?
No. It's just but all of the Me Too thing is shutting voices everywhere.
We've gone in a convoluted way. Could you even decipher?
All I remember is Andy was going to make a point about whale watching and watching the whale wallet.
And whales are big, big.
Do you remember what it was, Andy?
Well, let's just go on to the next story.
Well, you're the one that changed the subject.
Yeah, but then you started, and then you didn't finish.
Well, I just came forward. You just gave me a digression moment.
So this is a good example of
I think the audience out there is interested in Bitcoin, but sometimes you have to have a wind blow through to clear the air, and you've done that here. Now you can go back to the technical.
And people only got to hear my theory. Nobody got to hear Andy.
Kara has blown in
love
here.
Love you all.
Yeah. And she's not the witch of the
West. What
did
you want to say about the whales, Andy?
You got to remember, there are products out there in the making, the ETFs and stuff like that. So,
good segue, stay there because I want to go finish your thought.
So anyways, what a lot of people don't realize is how this happens. If you go back prior to the ETN, which is the Electronic Trade Network, of how stocks are traded now. Before going back to when Augie invested, you call up your broker and you were actually buying their inventory. you were not buying off of the, you weren't buying on the free open market like you do today with TD Ameritrade and stuff like that. You were actually buying their inventory. So whenever you buy gold from one of those big banks, J.P. Morgan and that, you call up, you're not buying on the open market. Again, you're buying from their inventory.
What's GLD?
I'm sorry?
You buy GLD?
GLD is actually a traded that, you know, is held in a, it's held a similar thing. But if you want to, if you want to be a big, if you're a big roller and you buy through HSBC or RBS or one of those big ones, you're buying actually their inventory and they sell to you. So one thing that these ETFs and they have to have inventory. So they want to accumulate the inventory as low as possible because once that ETF comes out, this thing's going vertical. I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, I guess you can make an argument that it goes to, you know, it goes down further. But once it gets into the open market where retailers can buy a Bitcoin ETF, you know, the market's going to, there's going to be momentum. They want to be selling their inventory at that point at a better price. So it makes no sense for them to show any of their hands that this is ever going to come out. And you keep seeing that with the SEC turning them down, dragging in their feet, all this. I mean, the case they make, Hester Pierce perfectly said, you could apply that to most ETFs out there. And if you applied the same standard, they would not be trading out as ETFs.
So what you're really saying is that come January, they're waiting for the lowest bottom to buy into.
Well, we don't know where the bottom is. Nobody yet does.
Let's just go to the story.
What I'm saying is,
since you brought up Hester Pierce.
Well, let me say, they want to accumulate at low prices, and it's in their best benefit to put FUD into the market, to make the market feel depressed, because that's when they accumulate. Jim Cramer actually did an interview in 2010. When the market came down, and he explained how these large in the stock market, yeah, with the futures market, and if they can do it in that, they're definitely doing it in here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So right, just keep that in mind, that there's no need for them to come out.
That's why they say when there's blood in the streets,
you buy. You
know. So we were just somewhere back there, we were talking about Gabor Gurbix and the VanEck ETF being delayed to February 27th on a decision for the Securities and Exchange. Well, the most pro-crypto a commissioner on the exchange, Securities and Exchange Commission, is Hester Pierce. She was the one person that voted for the last ETFs that were under consideration.
She's like one that's not from Goldman Sachs, right?
I don't know. It doesn't matter.
There's three of them on there.
What matters is
that
it's her opinion. The commission finds it appropriate to designate a longer period with issue an order. That was from the SEC. Then the Hester Pierce, which now I've scrolled down too far. Great. that was in the background. Let me go back up. Anyway, she said that it's going to take
one day to 2 years.
February 27th.
Narrow range here.
Yeah. She's just one person trying to convince others, and nobody should be counting on that to happen. Well, trying to leap from that to more relevance here to what Andy was saying, we'll just leave that as it is with Hester Pierce saying that she doesn't know when it's going to be, and open the possibility that it could still be years away, which I don't think is driving the downward trend in the market right now. But to speak to what Andy was saying about accumulation, Bitcoin Investment Trust, sponsored by Grayscale Investments, this was the symbol GBTC on the over-the-counter markets on the stock exchange that was the only place, the only exchange-traded fund. Now, it's not, because it's on the over-the-counter market, it's not held to the same stringency as these ones that are being considered by the SEC. But it was the high performer tracking Bitcoin throughout 2017. It's currently at a price at the close of market of about $3 or $4 at the close of market on Friday. It was as high as $18.94. So the same relative movement in Bitcoin that ran up to $20,000 from about $2,500 in that same period of time. Well, they have accumulated now over 1% of the circulating Bitcoin. Now, I even would say it's a bigger percentage of circulating Bitcoin if you mean Bitcoin that's actually moved in the market and is open for sale. They have 203,000 Bitcoins out of the 17.4 million in circulation. So that's over 1%. But we all know that some are lost. Some Bitcoins are lost forever. Some people are still hodling for years and years. So I would. What do you think, Andy? 2 or 3% maybe at least?
I would say that's probably, definitely 2%, low 2%. So
and you got to remember, we're talking about the actual number of Bitcoin. We're not talking about a dollar value here.
No.
So in this course of time, and a lot of people divested from this as Bitcoin was coming down. So if you were holding this ETF, you might probably sold it and take your profit, especially because the people that are buying ETFs are more like stock investors than true believers of cryptocurrency.
Well, actually, GTPC allowed for some of the larger fund managers to invest into Bitcoin directly.
One of my favorites, and I've shared some of their stuff with you, ARK Investments. Kathy Wood, who just got named one of the most influential...
She was on CNBC the other day.
Yeah, 50 most influential women in business or something. She oversaw that as they were the mutual fund that first invested in Bitcoin through the only thing they could, the GBTC, and rode that up, had one of the greatest returns in 2017 of any mutual fund. Well, they divested. I remember seeing her just a couple months ago when somebody asked her on CNBC. She said, no, we divested when the divesting was good.
At the right time,
But because I'm on the mailing list now, I see their transactions at the end of every business day. And for the last couple of weeks, they've been accumulating GBTC, especially on the relative dips from where we are now. So the only way GBTC buys more Bitcoin is if they have a demand for shares of their ETF. So if all the common people are divesting in the Coinbase, or not divesting, selling off in Coinbase, et cetera, like that, who are these people that... are investing in GBTC? Is it people like Kathy Wood and ARK Invest?
Absolutely. For every, we've been going over the last couple of weeks on our articles in that Wyckoff, because Wyckoff explained this very, very clearly in his 1932 and his 1937 books on how large operators work. And he wasn't the only one to write on it, but it's a very good book if you haven't read the book. And this is exactly how they do that. Remember, for every buyer that sells at any price, there's somebody buying it. It's not it's a zero-sum game. There has to be a buyer and there has to be a seller. And if you see the spike in volume down here, there's a lot of coins being absorbed. It's the highest volume we've had, whether it's selling or buying, in 3 months. Actually, going back to April.
And by, you don't mean by dollar value, by quantity of Bitcoin.
By quantity of Bitcoin. So the quantity of Bitcoin being traded right now is astronomical. Or it's not astronomical. It's as high as it was back in April.
Is that selling or buying?
Well, it doesn't matter, because for every buyer, there's a seller. It's a zero-sum game. And
if a seller is selling,
yes.
Is there a buyer?
Yeah, there is a buyer. So my point is somebody's absorbing all of this sell-off.
So the current dollar value of the 203,000 Bitcoins at this now, say, depressed level of Bitcoin price is $783 million, so almost $1 billion is being held by somebody that's buying into this ETF. Car, do you have any thoughts?
I just sent you all a tweet from Barry.
Who's Barry?
Barry is the founder of Grayscale.
Okay.
And I believe he's spending some of his Bitcoin on commercials.
Oh, yeah, I see that on CNBC.
Oh, okay.
I see Fidelity, I see all kinds of companies.
No, but he just started, didn't he?
Wow, I've seen it for weeks.
He just started today. Started filming his, not Fidelity's.
If you're in the business of mutual funds and exchange traded funds, if I were to go deeper into this article, his other funds for accredited investors can make investments of $200,000 with other cryptocurrencies have lagged well behind. So, like his Ether investment trust and some of those. He probably does need to
step it up, his own advertising.
Right.
Still interesting. I don't see the demand side the way you guys do, but I also must confess that my attention hasn't been focused on that because I just, sometimes we ignore what...
At the beginning of 2018, they were holding just over 170,000 Bitcoins, and now they're over 203,000 bitcoins. So 30,000 bitcoins times the current price is a lot of money.
20% increase, yeah.
But you guys are saying because the demand is there based on some of the those that are purchasing it.
Well, I don't know how many shares are of the ETF are held in the company treasury, so that's a possibility. But
well, there's a large demand from institutional investors, and unfortunately they cannot because of the custodial issues and a lot of it is their way they can invest in their what do they call documents or.
So two questions on that. If it's OTC, then there should be financial statements I can still take a look at, right?
But you're trying to get clear of all this.
No, I'm really not. I mean, this is crypto, right?
Yeah.
And you've now accepted me. I mean, you're still smiling when I walk through the door, right?
Yeah. Well, it's more important to smile when you walk out.
We thought you left there shortly after the text thing last night.
Then my second question. Andy, what are you looking at to measure demand, like, of institutional investors? Like, what is the proxy for demand of institutional investors? The ARK Invest purchases?
Well, that's public.
Yeah.
But the over-the-counter stuff, who knows?
Yeah, and there's a large
as opposed to over-the-counter stock exchange.
That's correct, because there's still a lot of, most of the transactions still happen over-the-counter.
Two-thirds.
Two-thirds of the happen on the deal. Those aren't Augie, Henry, and I buying, half a Bitcoin. I mean, they're buying thousands at a time. So, and what happens is Augie wants to get rid of 10,000 Bitcoin. He calls up his broker, Henry, and goes, Henry, I want to get rid of 10,000 Bitcoin. So that it doesn't disturb the market. Henry goes and he says, well, I got this, of course, it's done all anonymously. I have a buyer that's willing to pay you $200 under spot, under the retail, to go ahead and move that much, because obviously Augie doesn't want to dump that much. But like you said, for every seller, there's a buyer.
And there's not a regulation on when that gets reported as opposed to, like, spot markets and the stock market.
I'm not hearing the answer that Cara asked, which is, what is demand?
Demand
is not clear here.
Do we know that it's institutional investors that are the buyer?
Well, a lot of them have. I mean, because some of them have to report. So we saw in the second quarter, at least, like Harvard, Yale endowment funds, a lot of the endowment funds, reported that they had invested in it.
Harvard, Yale, Princeton, North Carolina, and Dartmouth.
Yeah. Now, private investment funds don't have to report.
Hedge funds.
We don't have updated numbers from, so we had the Harvard, Yale from the second quarter, but Bitcoin has severely declined, the price of Bitcoin, since that second quarter when we had that information. The whale activity from second quarter till now, we don't really have clear insight as to who the buyers are, correct?
Institutions you're going to know about.
No, not necessarily.
Well,
not if it's a private.
Well, if it's a hedge fund or one of those.
Well, here's the good thing about the whale thing, and I'm glad you bring that up. Anybody that's played poker or anything like that, when you're playing against other people, you want them to think you have a hand. Oh, I flopped the nuts. I want them to think I'm chasing a flush. And you want to suck them into it. And so large whale, if anybody's a large player, and they know that by moving $500 million worth of Bitcoin from one wallet to another wallet is going to push the market down, they put in buy orders lower, move the wallet, they don't do nothing with it, and the whole market moves. Mm-hmm. So, I mean,
what's the ratio between institutions
we're going to get into too much math here on this.
Trying to say is don't take it at face value. Just because something happens, don't we assume, and that goes back to the oldest trick in the book in market speculation.
It's a poker game.
Yeah, buy the rumor, sell the news. Right. And it still happens today. So I don't get caught up as much in the whale watching.
One thing, because take it back to ARK Invest and wrap this up full circle. So when they had the run up on Bitcoin, they had two reasons to divest from Bitcoin. One is to take profit, but the other thing is by the charter that they could not have more than 10% of the fund in any one holding. So when they're buying now, but they may have to sell if the value of Bitcoin goes up. So it's not always a direct indicator of which way the market's going, but it is indicative that they wouldn't be buying it if they didn't think they were going to get a return from them.
Absolutely, and I think this last thing with the Bitcoin Cash and that has really put a damper on the altcoin market. And I'm in Kara's camp that it's Bitcoin. You know, going forward, it's going to be Bitcoin or nothing, because I think a lot of these altcoins, they're not as decentralized as people think. They claim to be decentralization, but they're not.
Let's use that to take us into the next story. And also, let me say, you're listening to WWPR, 1490 AM, Bradenton, Sarasota, St. Petersburg, Tampa Bay. And this is one of the stories that I thought Kara might opine for us on. According to MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology Review, two researchers of the prestigious Imperial College of London have utilized artificial intelligence to analyze hundreds of crypto pump and dump schemes to figure out a way to spot them. So they're using artificial intelligence through the Imperial College of London. We use Kara's brain. Even on major trading platforms, the market has seen assets pump within a period of hours and dump within seconds after the buildup, mostly organized by private Telegram groups. In the study, Zhua Yu and Benjamin Lipschitz, how did those two guys get together? At the Imperial College of London revealed that on average, at least two pump-and-dump schemes are materialized in the crypto market on a daily basis, producing $7 million in daily trading volumes. For instance, one of the 236 pump-and-dump schemes, Zhu and Lipschitz, studied between July 21st and November 18th, is a little-known coin called BVB, like Boy Victor Boy. Have you ever heard of that one, Carl?
I haven't.
Okay, me either. Which is what they're looking for. The researchers, once a Telegram group announced the initiation of a pump on the asset, the price of BVB almost immediately skyrocketed to its peak. To go from a low range to an all-time high, it took 18 seconds. We noticed the first buy order was placed and completed with 1 second after the first coin announcement. After a mere 18 seconds of manic buying, the coin price already skyrocketed. 3.5 minutes after the start, the coin price had dropped below its open price. They like low market cap cryptocurrencies, especially those with less than 1 million in daily volume. Very cheap then to manipulate. And you were opining, as I said, about the ease of manipulation. Have you seen anything like that happen?
So there is quite a bit of that, and the danger here with this goes beyond even just the pump and dump circles that are on Telegram. It bleeds up to the exchange level, and you have some of the higher up market makers or people tied into the exchange, and they have this insider information that's even above the perceived in the know little group. So half the time, these people that are falling for these pump and dumps and think that they're going to get rich, they're buying in at, like, the high right before they call for the dump anyway. So, I mean, the potential for this is extreme, especially as you have unregulated exchanges. I mean, and even within, you've got some regulated exchanges, partially, I call them partially regulated, because if you hook up one, like a Coinbase, and then Poloniex, which, yes, it now falls under U.S. regulation, and they've been working to clean up the pass, they still got a pass going on there.
And I'm going to try and move this along to wrap this up into a couple other stories here, because also, since you brought up the Coinbase and some of the exchanges that are going on, and we'll take it into the Bitcoin Cash fork too here, after months of hope, Ripple investors may finally realize, and it looks like Coinbase has confirmed that it is exploring adding support. I don't know if that's a confirmation if you're exploring adding support, but it is a change from how they referred to it before. The San Francisco-based Coinbase announced the move on Friday when it revealed that it's adding support for, quote, a broad range of assets. More than 30 were explicitly named, including heavyweights such as, that's their term, Cardano, ADA, EOS, NEO, and Tezos, XTZ. But I'm looking at the graph here,
I mean, some of the coins they put on there are complete garbage.
I don't know what these are. ENJ, ONT. Ken is.
Oh, ONT's tied into NEO. And PRC. Oh, well, that's not a coin. That's a country.
Well, KIN, yeah. Ken is the going to be tokenized on the Ken chat group. That's one of the big ones that I guess more than 50
and
people
that
than
one
me
has
are
been
on.
A big one. And I'll let you finish before.
Well, no, I'm just looking for all the things I don't recognize. I mean, some of the ones, you know, Stellar I recognize, OMG. But I would say about half of these, I've been doing the radio show for a year and a half. I don't know what these are, much less, I mean, I haven't even really remember hearing of them, much less know what they are. Then there's some I've heard of, but I have no idea. So what's the thoughts about why Coinbase would be adding these in such a down market? I mean, NEO, what was that now, $3 or $4?
I'm glad we got out of that.
And it was up around 30 or 40?
It was up at 100 and some at one point.
Yeah.
And then it
fell
back
down.
So
why now? Why now does Coinbase want to put all these on?
Well, you know, I mean, I'll tell you what. First, you know, again, and I'm in Kara's camp. You know, I drank from the Kool-Aid. I'm not going to lie to anybody. Well, if you didn't drink from the Kool-Aid, you were very thirsty the last year. So we all drank from the Kool-Aid. But the more and more I look at it, if it does not have an ecosystem, if it doesn't have a working product, it's probably going to go to zero because there's really nothing much that, you know, Bitcoin can't do.
Even what you just said, if it's a working product and it should have a low value because you want to facilitate the whatever the operation is that you're doing.
User adoption. I mean, you're spot on, Henry. I mean, these things should not be trading at a store of value level. They're not equity tokens. I mean, If they've got high user volume and people using their platform, they shouldn't really be worth anything.
Let's take something that should have a little value. The BAT token that people reward advertisers on the Brave browser. But that might have its own independent market price based on I guess how it's awarded, what the volume is out there that's awarded to people on the Brave browser, and how much the advertisers want to compete for it.
I think what Carl's going to is eventually it's got to be pegged to a dollar. So what is somebody willing to?
No, I'm not. But carry on.
Oh. All right. You know, it's got to be pegged to something that has a value. And so what is a BAT token going to be worth?
But let's take another example, Stellar, which is made to enable transactions, that needs to keep a low price.
See, now that's an interesting one, and that's actually one that I think could actually turn into a store of value. I've kind of switched on this, and the reason I say that is because it's fast. It's able to convert any currency into any other currency very quickly, and it can be stored in a wallet and used to pay for things. So I think that one actually could be.
But if it's going to be for a transaction, it can't be expensive. It can go up.
Agreed. And who is going to use actual XLM to pay for something? And who's going to accept it? I mean, this isn't much more than the Swift network that abandoned their R&D on it. And it's open source network with unlimited supply.
I'm hearing an interesting contrast. Andy just said you have to be pegged to something. It's to stabilize and trust.
I think most.
What is this role reversal that's happening in this studio?
You used to
say that all the time.
What's that?
Bizarro world.
That Bitcoin needed to be pegged to something. The crypto needed to be pegged to something.
Right.
And now it's coming out of his mouth.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the thing with XLM is.
And she's the contrarian now.
So now I'm going to get. That's why I raised the question. But Kara immediately said, no way.
Well, we all have our own opinions.
No, but let's hear what her opinion is.
Well, I want to go back to Andy's point and let him develop it out, but I just didn't want to conflate it with stablecoins, which are currently what we're believing is pegged to a dollar, and I don't believe every coin should be valued at a dollar, but pegged to...
Every stablecoin or...
Or
denominated in a dollar.
I mean, stablecoins are their whole own market, but, like, the BAT token should not be pegged to a dollar. The BAT token is a utility token, and I'm fine with the market deciding what the utility is, but that market should be participants who are actually using
which is how it's supposed to operate.
But it's currently not. it's being used by speculators.
Let me stop you all for a second. So there's a couple of points of this article I want to put out today. So the Coinbase decision follows its, quote, revamping of its listing process, which firms said would allow provide support of a much larger range of cryptocurrency. All that had to do with they want to make sure they don't violate the securities laws, et cetera. But then you go to the little expansion of that I thought was interesting. Adding new assets requires significant exploratory work from both a technical and compliance standpoint, and we cannot guarantee that all the assets we are evaluating will ultimately be listed for trading. Okay. So that just means some of them aren't going to get picked up. But then the next sentence, furthermore, our listing process may result in some of these assets being listed solely for customers to buy and sell without the ability to send or receive using a local wallet. So in other words, unlike when you buy Bitcoin on Coinbase or any of the other things that they've had so far, you have a wallet on Coinbase, which I think is what they mean by the local wallet. So if you're – that means – following through with that thought, if it's not going to go through a wallet on Coinbase, it's a direct sale between two parties, which means it sounds like a decentralized app exchange. Doesn't it to you, Cara?
It also kind of sounds like moving money from one pocket to another and marrying up people, something that's used when you don't have banking.
Elaborate.
I mean, it definitely kind of sounds to me like we can't actually.
You're talking about shell corporations, or you move money from one to the other?
Yeah, like let's just say you don't have a bank, and you want to.
There's going to be reporting problems if you're trying to know your customer anti-money laundering issues.
Exactly.
And let's go one more point with this.
Casinos.
So. Not that point. That we've seen some people, I think what the SEC say, I think what Chairman Clayton say, that just because you're a decentralized exchange, as we're discussing now, with you're just peer-to-peer, but you're the host of the system, doesn't get you out of having to be registered and compliant as a securities exchange. Or some kind of maybe not security, but something
else.
Here
we go.
So if that's the case, and all these people that have been operating like that may be in a violation of regulations, then it sounds like Coinbase is there to pick up the pieces.
Audit time.
and that's a lot of it. I mean, I don't see how they're going to pull this off. I really don't.
Which part?
The attempting to act as a decentralized exchange and circumvent.
Why?
If they're circumventing reporting, there's no way they're going to be able to pull that off.
It's called pretense.
Because you actually are. Consider what you could do with this. You could marry two parties without intervening, and potentially one be an illicit sources and then with a legitimate one without you ever having to touch it. I mean, it's how projects that are currently not banked and somebody wants to cash out, that's what they do. It's exactly that. I mean, you think about what could potentially happen here. I'm not saying that it will. I'm just saying what it opens itself up to if you don't have the proper reporting and oversight here is that if I want to redeem, and we'll use BAT in this case.
Well, no, let me stop you for a second. So, but to be one of these people on Coinbase's decentralized exchange, you have to do all your know your customer stuff. You have to be identified. And then all these transactions, there's a trail.
And do they, in fact, have the – I mean, do we know that they have the ability to do that? If they do, then I can see that potentially happening. And in a way, it's kind of
– Well, to get on their exchange, you have to identify yourself. You have to provide that just like you do for their exchange now. So I read it and I was like, they're going to shove all the other operations out of the market.
Oh, I don't see that.
Well, I mean, there'll be illicit ones, but outside the U.S. that could go on.
And are you saying that you still believe? Well, and then that brings me back, actually, trailing back to the other point on the pump and dumps, though, is that if you've got an exchange operating legitimately, trying to compete, and you've got traders on that trying to compete against multiple other exchanges that are not compliant, how in the world can you even be competitive? I mean, you're trading into a massive bloodbath.
Yeah.
That's what I think is misleading there. But if they have the ability, and to come back to try to close this out on the same thought of where you were going, they're still in the process of evaluating these these tokens as to whether they're able to list them and still be cool with the SEC, right? Even if it's decentralized, or you're saying that this
I've read all I have.
Okay.
The SEC, one of the things that comes up is Ripple's been in the, you know, obviously it's been a big thing. Is it a security in that? And I wonder if they're going to look at it as like this. And I know I'm not a law expert, but I go to issue a token and I say, listen, it's going to cost you. You can get in early and you can get, you know, it's going to cost you $1 a token and you can buy as many. But, you know, boy, you know how the ICO market frenzy, that's one thing. You're actually issuing something and you're saying there's a price for it to go up, as opposed to Ripple, which never had an ICO. Ripple never had an ICO. They're just selling what they had. And so I think there's two different differences between selling something with the intent of, oh, you're investing in this new platform and it's going to be the latest, it's going to solve, you know, cancer.
That's hardly ever happening anymore now.
Well, I understand that, but I'm saying for the existing tokens, so if that's how they came about, if that's how they were introduced into the market by selling as an ICO, then I don't know. Maybe that's how they're going to separate out from stuff like Bitcoin, which never had an ICO.
Declare new management? Is that what you're talking about?
No. If you make art, what's that?
I'm listening.
Augie's got it. He was headed right there. That you're relying on management or third party for a profit.
Right.
That's a security.
Well, I don't think Ripple is, though, because if I buy Augie's art, I'm buying his art because I'm hoping it goes up. Anybody that buys art or anything, I'm hoping that the value goes up.
Maybe you just
now,
like it.
Now, is Augie selling me art? Is that a security?
Maybe or I bought Augie's art because I think it's such great and it speaks to me,
well,
but I don't think anybody else is going to pay more than I will.
What's your point, Henry? I didn't hear it.
I was just giving him a hard time.
But if I say to Augie, hey, I'm going to invest in you to make art, and we're going to sell it and make a lot of money, then that's different. I think there's two different things, and it's not just the Howey test that's important. There's the family resemblance test, which was in 1990 determined by the Supreme Court, that says you have to have that family resemblance. So I think if you issue it and it looks like a security and you issued it like a security, it's different than something that just had value because people were willing to pay for it. And I think that's where
one's an established value.
Well, one's an established value. I'm selling
it. Now the other's a promotional value.
The other thing's a promotional. If I buy all the oranges in Florida.
So if you buy my artwork and then you promote it, you promote your gain. That's different.
Well,
so if you buy a Picasso, you're going to hope that the demand will grow for its rarity.
Okay.
So somebody that's unknown is a promotional. That's the difference.
If you make the Augie coin.
Okay, take this full circle back.
Okay, full circle back. You know, I don't think it's as cut and dry as people think. I think there's
there's two different paths there.
Yeah.
Okay, well, the original point of the story was Coinbase is doing this. What was Coinbase's motives? And
pump and dump.
How does Coinbase make money on that if they're not participating in the transaction?
I mean, why would they list 30 coins that have all been depressed
to
80-90%
demonstrate volume on the exchange for their IPO?
Absolutely.
So they see the value of their IPO slipping away, and they need to create interest.
Maybe a question
like cockroaches from a rate.
Let's move on, because I want to get to the other thing that you were going to talk about, the Bitcoin Cash, ABC, Bitcoin Cash, SV, and how that's going about that. But you can be sure that...
I know this is something that is being monitored by our team.
So they're on it in Washington. In a development that's fair to say few saw coming, Bitcoin SV, the cryptocurrency introduced three last months, Bitcoin Cash fork, is now worth more than Bitcoin Cash token itself. Well, that was yesterday when the – right now they're almost equal on the service that I was looking at. A flippening between the two cryptocurrencies appeared to be inbound. The BSV price steadily gained on BCH, which has somehow been granted or anointed the old BCH as opposed to BCH ABC title. And the Bitcoin price crashed to a near new yearly low. So they're now at about the same. Their combined price is much lower than before this all started. It remains unclear what is driving the rally and the Bitcoin Cash sell-off, given that the latter retains more support among crypto exchange and other infrastructure providers. However, unverified rumors, which we love here, that crypto mining giant, another expertise of our Kara, returning Kara here. See, she didn't want to talk about it, but I knew that she would have insight that nobody else here would. Anyway, a crypto mining giant Bitmain lost hundreds of millions of dollars last quarter, may be weighing on Bitcoin Cash, giving the firm as one of the coin's top backers instead of being one of the world's largest holders of Bitcoin Cash. However, CoinGeek founder Calvin Ayer, on the opposing BSV side backers, could be providing BSV with buy support to prevent it from suffering under the weight of the present sell-off that just may continue. Well, and there is also the ever-present possibility that traders are engaging in a Bitcoin Cash BSV pump and dump, which could become evident soon.
When you're in a failed situation, a failed market, the people in control of the money and have invested unwisely and want to make money, they're going to do a pump and dump as a routine, and that's exactly where this is headed.
Real quick, and I'm going to turn the microphone over to the brains of the good bunch here. This was a huge fundamental disruption in the whole crypto space. And after this, you know, because we even did an article that said Bitcoin Cash versus Bitcoin SV.
Podomatic site. Okay. Podomatic.com. You can go back and see and listen to the archives, because you'll go back. It'll be labeled there. You'll hear the Roger Ver audio about before the fork,
like
what
baby
was going to happen, the threats back, I won't say back and forth, the threats involved. It's all there. That's what Andy's talking about. Podomatic.com, just Google Henry Main Show. Use that one, but it's on Apple Podcast
I
too
think
there
it,
if you want
it. Really, it did more to harm the whole market as a whole, and it actually shows the cracks in crypto, these decentralized coins in general, that they really are controlled by one or two people, and they can have a detrimental effect on what you're holding. So
can or will.
Is, you know,
can or will.
They showed the crack. I mean, you don't know which ones. And that's why something like Ripple or XLM has a very – they have a, you know, a whole different way of hooking it up. But something like this, you know, two guys split apart, and it's brought down the whole market.
Yeah.
I mean, it really did.
Just a reminder that Ripple and Stellar – have access to an ungodly supply.
Yes, absolutely. But
I thought you were saying something about Bitcoin Cash.
We did early on when I was first looking at Ripple. It's interesting you say that, because I went through and calculated the number of SWIFT international transactions done a day, and I said, and if it's an average of $10 per transaction, it costs someone an average of $10 per transaction, and you break it down into it costs 0.00001 Ripple to do it. If you go over a period of 50 years, and take a $10 per transaction at that, Ripple's worth about $5 to $7. And that was just basing it on transaction volume of SWIFT alone, because there's a lot of volume that happens.
So I believe one of our turning into regulars, Stephen, is much more a Ripple scholar than myself. But for the most part, Ripple and Stellar act as spam deterrents.
Yes.
That's really all they do.
What is a spam deterrent?
So just so that you're not, so that bad actors aren't spamming the payment.
Creating transactions to clog the network.
Clogging the network, exactly. So I really don't see that
it's
much.
More like they prevent a denial of service.
That's exactly it. Oh, Henry, you are so good at recalling archives.
Pulling some things out of your mind.
Yes, but I can't in 10 minutes.
But they're burned once they're done. So, you know.
What keeps them from making more?
Well, there's only a... Well, again,
when they
like
get through their 800 billion
solid white paper.
Yeah, let me clarify again. There's going to be one coin that emerges from all this. It's going
to
be Bitcoin.
Well, let's get back to the Bitcoin SV, Bitcoin Cash SV, and the other one. What's going on with them?
So, were you finished with your?
Yeah,
your
is Bitmain supporting one? Is somebody else helping the other?
So to me, so I didn't follow the actual hash war the way I really wanted to. I'm sure somebody issued a stable coin and I had to
read
about
that. And Roger
Ver is
being sued about it right now.
Oh yeah, so that's an interesting
circle of distraction,
and all those people are right here in this good story that you have. But with Bitmain, so Jian Wu and Roger Ver were on the same side, and they had been politicking for the ABC. Do we still call it the ABC version?
I guess it's now been anointed Bitcoin Cash.
So that version.
Through the exchanges, through whatever democratic process they decided it.
Right, exactly, which I missed that whole thing. Of course, Bitmain had a ton of Bitcoin Cash to begin with, and if you watch some of his YouTube videos or follow him at all, Jian Wu has plans for Bitcoin Cash as it is, and he's got some other token called Wormhole or something of that nature. But there was a lot going on, and there still is. HitBTC, I know, has deposits disabled. Or withdrawals, and there's a lot of deposits and withdrawals disabled for Bitcoin Cash for the SV versus the Bitcoin Cash. And to wrap this up in particular, my take, and I know he's at a minimum tweeted about it, Jian Wu, when there's a fork, you get quote unquote free tokens. He got free SVs that he wants to just dump and crash it. And if he does that, and he can make... Because right now, Bitcoin Cash and Bitcoin SV are at 6th and 7th on the market cap behind the lovely Tether. So it goes back to Andy's point of it really does damage the market and your coin when you have a fork, because you've now split that chain in two. You've cut the value, and you've allowed a stable coin to come up. But if Jian Wu can get everybody to dump their SVs, it raises their value and they move up.
Kara, this is for you. Well, if a computer was faster, it would be for you. Anyway, that's what happens when you don't do pre-production here. Yeah.
We missed it.
Try it again. I'll pick it up.
Let's try it
just
again.
When I thought I was out, they pulled me back in.
I couldn't hear
you
it.
You got it.
All right, one more time for Augie.
Well, I think...
That's why you don't hear it.
I'm sorry. Sorry about that. Kara, I hear chaos. That's what I hear.
Well, there's definitely chaos, in particular because Bitmain supports multiple projects. And there was something that came out recently in that lawsuit. Can I just jump ahead to that whole?
Yeah, you go ahead if you got it. But it was a company. I think that the suit was filed here in Florida. Although I don't know if the company, because when I was looking at the company, I didn't see a Florida address. The company that is being damaged by all of this, that claims they've been damaged, trades at like 10 cents. So.
That's chaos.
Well, so and for the most part, and I did not read it in detail, and I certainly, there are enough legal professionals that I follow that I don't even begin to opine on anything that's legal anymore, and there's enough accounting interest in the space to distract me. But from what I've heard of other lawyers, it was more, in fact, I think to quote Stephen Pally, it throw it up against the wall and see what sticks, kind of lawsuit. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting...
I've got it here. United American Corp, a Florida-based corporation, filed it against Bitmain, Bitcoin.com, Roger Ver, Kraken Bitcoin Exchange, and according to, oh, they were founded in 1992. So you've gotten a great return on your investment there if you're up to 10 cents. But they believe that the defendants colluded to effectively hijack the Bitcoin Cash network after the November 15th scheduled software update with the intent of centralizing the network, all in violation of accepted standards and protocols associated with Bitcoin since its inception, which I'm sure has great common law weight in the Florida court system.
Yeah, it didn't sound like it was going to go very far, but I think what it did at least was illustrate some related parties and float some theories of relationships and possibilities of what can happen. Because in one part of it that I saw, I mean, they're using, so Bitmain and Roger Ver are, of course, tied into a multitude of projects and exchanges. And then you've got Kraken, that I believe Kraken was kind of essentially exchanging coins and fiat for China. Because well, wasn't China at the top of this?
Some of the issues are the rented hashing, which I believe would be the Bitmain, to get the hashing power to control the network, and then inserting a poison pill in, quote, deep reorg prevention in order to strengthen control. I think that's so you, what do they call those? Gosh, I was on the tip of my tongue. No, you can't do an update.
Oh, to, right, like to prevent an update or a takeover. I mean, they're borrowing from the equities market.
It's supposed to prevent double pay. But you, it also has another purpose, as this lawsuit contends.
I would, yeah, which I'm not thinking. I'm only thinking of, I'm distracted by the fact that I'm so entertained that they borrow from the equities language all the time, even though they want to divorce themselves from it. I mean, it's an attempt to thwart off takeovers or other parties from your little scheme.
Oh. Well, we have almost gotten to the end of the show here. I want to thank Kara for coming back in with us, and it's been a joy for the three of us, I'm sure.
Thanks for having me back, and I do want to say one thank you to anybody who follows me on Twitter in my pursuit of doing a deep dive on stablecoins. I recently started doing some Twitter polls to understand retail traders and investors and their idea of why they need a stable coin, and I appreciate everybody. I think I had close to 200 responses, so I really appreciate it.
Wow. So you need to start a polling company.
No, I do not need to start anything new. I'm just happy to be back, and I'm happy that you all seem to be accepting
happy
me.
Happy to have you back. Well,
hard not to.
Couldn't be said better than in Godfather 3.
Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in.
Now I heard it.
Well, Akara, thank you. Andy, thank you for being here. Augie, thank you as always. And hopefully we'll get the chance to
clear up the chaos, right? Clear up the chaos.
Sometime.
Kara, clear up the chaos.
That'll work.
All right, we'll be back next week with another Henry Ainge show.
Songs of freedom is all I ever